You're listening to WGXC, Accra, Hudson, Catskill, 90.7 FM. We're here for you.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Upstate Films, where membership provides access to world-class cinema, first-run feature films, arthouse films, live music, and more. Plus, advance notice of close-up conversations with directors and actors and other special events at the Star Theater in Rhinebeck, the Orpheum in Socrates, and traveling around the Hudson Valley. Information at upstatefilms.org/support. That's upstatefilms.org.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Peter Meyer in Hudson, New York. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
The Public News Service Doe Newscast, May the 28th, 2024. I'm Mike Clifford. The weather over the long weekend proved to be both severe and deadly. At least 23 people, including four kids, are dead in Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Kentucky, and Alabama after severe weather and tornadoes struck the central U.S. That from CNN. Meantime, the travel hubs of Atlanta, New York, Philadelphia, and Charlotte could have to contend with damaging storms leading to delayed or canceled flights on the holiday. And a new report analyzes the workforce dynamics in Oregon and how the state can address gaps for workers and for industries. Eric Taganoff has our report.
The 2024 talent assessment finds that Oregon's economy is in a strong position, with significant growth in the labor market and more growth anticipated in the future. Christiana McFarland is with SRI, the firm that conducted the assessment. She says there are some factors that could be barriers to achieving that future growth.
We know that jobs are projected to grow, but we know that the population and population growth is relatively stagnant. So that's going to be a challenge into the future, particularly for occupations and industries that have a really high demand for workers in the state, particularly healthcare and childcare.
The assessment was conducted for the Workforce and Talent Development Board and the Higher Education Coordinating Commission for the state of Oregon.
Supporters say rural Oregon could be another asset for the state when considering how it closes employment gaps in semiconductor, manufacturing, and other industries. And now a story close to any broadcaster's heart, the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act, now in Congress, could mandate that all new cars in the U.S. be equipped with AM radios. And it's stirring a debate in states like Missouri.
The legislation is supported by 60 bipartisan U.S. senators, including Missouri Republican Josh Hawley. But it is criticized by the Consumer Technology Association for its potential to increase vehicle costs and stifle innovation, particularly as electric vehicles rise in popularity. Association CEO Gary Shapiro testified against the mandate in a House subcommittee. He highlights the financial and technological burdens this mandate would place on automakers and consumers alike.
AM radio is wonderful, but it should not be required in every car sold in the forever future because it is a trade-off with safety and other features, and it costs money, and it slows the shift to electric cars.
Proponents of the mandate argue that AM radio is crucial for emergency broadcasts, particularly in rural areas where digital signals may be weak. Shapiro says incorporating AM radios into EVs is problematic due to signal interference from the batteries, which would cause costly redesigns and divert resources from other advancements. Farah Siddiqui reporting.
This is Public News Service.
If two Michigan lawmakers have their way, there will be fewer locations in that state where people are allowed to carry firearms.
Democratic Senators Dana Polhanke of Livonia and Rosemary Baer of Beverly Hills have introduced bills that would expand gun-free zones within the state capitol complex. Both have advocated for stricter gun laws in Michigan. Senate Bills 857 and 858 would make it illegal to carry a firearm in the state capitol building, the Bensfield Senate building, and the Anderson House office building, with an exception for legislators. Ryan Bates, who heads the group End Gun Violence Michigan, believes these proposals are much needed.
We cannot have a functioning democracy at the barrel of a gun. So it's incredibly important that we protect our legislators and protect our democracy from people who want to do it harm by bringing guns into the places where our laws are made.
If the gun-free zone bills become law, violators could face up to 90 days in jail and or be fined. Crystal Blair reporting.
And Save the Children is working with child care providers along the Texas coast ahead of the upcoming hurricane season.
The organization has formed the Gulf Coast Resilience Network to provide child care facilities with plans and tools to help them reopen or offer services quickly after a weather-related disaster. Melissa Mesquita with Save the Children says by working together, the network can get families back to their normal lives sooner.
If those child care centers can't open, kids are at home, parents are at home, and it just causes a sense of frustration and we can't get back to those normal routines. And so that's where we sort of see those breakdowns. And it really, really impacts the family, you know, truly economically, emotionally.
She says members go through emergency preparedness training and receive assistance on how to find funding after a disaster. Psychosocial and social emotional support is also available, so parents know how to help their children cope with the disaster. I'm Frieda Ross reporting.
The 2024 hurricane season runs from June 1st through November 30th. Finally, our Suzanne Potter lets us know a new documentary series takes a look at medical aid in dying through the eyes of terminally ill people advocating for a peaceful passing on their own terms.
The show, Take Me Out Feet First, just debuted on Amazon Prime. In the first episode, director Serene Michelle Dillman follows her mother's journey and then her father's 5 years later as they chose to pass away at home in the Bay Area, surrounded by friends and family.
My father said, if people of sound mind want to take this route out of life, they should have the right. Anytime somebody avoids pain and suffering, how can you argue with that?
This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported. Hear us on great radio stations on your favorite podcast platform. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Tuesday, May 28th. Local early morning temperatures range from 59 degrees in Medusa to 67 in Kinderhook. Regional average soil temperature is 64 degrees. Pollen levels for today will be high. Today will be mostly cloudy with a high of 76 at 3 p.m. and a chance for an afternoon rain shower around 7 p.m. Overnight will be dry and have a low of 57 degrees. Tomorrow, real rain returns around 10 a.m. It will continue all day and we get a high of 73 at 3 p.m. Overnight, rain continues and we see a low of 55. Thursday, rain all day, high of 70. Friday, things finally change. It will be dry, sunny, and have a high of 74. And it doesn't look like a bad weekend coming up either. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 12:57 a.m., high tide at 6:52 a.m., low tide again at 1:58 p.m., and high tide once again at 7:50 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 76 degrees, and the tide strength is average. Sunset today will be at 8:07 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:20 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances are at 30%, and that is thanks to sunspot 3664. And everyone knows that spot because it's the one that caused the low-level auroras in May. So who knows what it's got to offer this time. Plasma winds will be slow at 342 kilometers per second with an average density of 7 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently terrible till dark, then fair below 14 megahertz overnight. There are no chances for aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 116. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Nah, I don't like that.
Well, try just putting on, even if it takes a hair more time, putting a little bit more of a wry thing on correct.
Track 13.
This announcement from the producers of this record contains important information for radio program directors and is not for broadcast. The first cut on this record has been cross-format focused for airplay success. As you well know, a record must break on radio in order to actually provide a living for the artists involved. Up until now, you've had to make these record-breaking decisions on your own, relying only on perplexing intangibilities like taste and intuition. But now, there's a better way. The cut that follows is the product of newly developed compositional techniques based on state-of-the-art marketing analysis technology. This cut has been analytically designed to break on radio, and it will, sooner or later. For the station that breaks it first, the benefits are obvious. You lead the pack. Yes, no matter what share of this crazy market you do business in, no other release is going to satisfy your corporation's current idea of good radio like this one. On this cut, we're working together on the same wavelength in scientific harmony. But remember, this cut is constructed for multi-market breaking now. Don't waste valuable research with needless delay. We've done the hard work of ensuring your success. The final step is up to you. Special designer song follows in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Injection.
so-called injection of the air into the esophagus. Immediately afterwards, you will hear the basic sounds formed.
I'm Jeff Economy, host of Snack Point Charlie, heard the first and third Wednesday of every month from 10 to midnight here on WGXC. I'm here today to talk with Dr. Drew Daniel and Martin Schmidt of Matmos, who will be performing as part of WGXC's drive-in extravaganza on May 31st. That's Negative Land plus Sue C., Matmos, and Rodney Allen Greenblatt, live at the Greenville Drive-In, May 31st. Tickets are available at wavefarm.org/drive-in. Well, speaking of starting, I'm not sure where to start this, but so I guess I'll start with the most recent record that I've heard. I'm not sure if there's anything after this that's somehow come out, but Return to Archive.
You are correct.
All right.
It's the most recent record of Matmos's to come out that you can choose or choose not to listen to or purchase.
And you can choose or choose not to hear us play some of it live very soon.
Very interesting. I have not had any idea what your specific plans are for the show, and I wasn't sure if you were going to keep that a secret, if you wanted to surprise us, or what your agenda was.
We will play some of it. I was just creating a video for it last night to go on the giant drive-in movie screen.
Very nice. It's a strange album. Return to Archive sits oddly, I think, in the Matmos canon, if I can say something so pompous. Because mostly we tend to pick a concept that drives sampling choices, but it's often about objects. It's not really about sampling recordings made by others. You know, at the very beginning of Matmos, we had a lot of pieces that had tiny acts of theft, but they were usually concealed. They were sort of Easter eggs for a listener to dig in and go, oh my God, that's a little piece of David Bowie, or that's a little piece of Ligeti. But mostly we weren't about that. It wasn't really a Plunderphonic project. But in this case, we were sort of licensed to ill. You know, the Smithsonian Folkways was celebrating its 75th anniversary, and they asked us if we would be interested in making a record out of their back catalog. And we were really excited about it because we'd always loved Folkways records. I mean, there's so many really crazy records that they put out. But early on, we made a framing decision of, like, we're not going to remix other people's music. We're not going to, you know, take a loop of a blues song and, like, do a, you know, Moby to it, you know, that, like, that's not the approach that interested us. We wanted specifically the non-musical components, and to make music out of things that are not already music was the foundation, I guess, for Return to Archive. It was really fun to do. It was also, like, there was sort of a gun to our head because it had to come out the 75th anniversary year. So we weren't able to just dawdle the way that sometimes
we do.
Yeah. We had to be really kind of lean and mean. And I think in a way that helped us get over the problem of too much, you know, that the archive of the back catalog is just like hundreds of hours of stuff. And like, you could spend your life, you could spend 10 years making that record if you wanted, but we had like, okay, do this in about 6 months. And for us, that was a cool challenge.
Yep. We made a whole song out of just a few seconds of what I'm going to guess is a very angry hornet in a ball jar, in a glass jar that has a microphone shoved in one end of it. And the hornet or
wasp.
It's a wasp. That's right. And the wasp comes closer and further away from the microphone. It's not a very long recording, but man, we cranked out a mean little song out of it.
Yeah, it was fun to make because it was about, you know, how far can you take something very particular that in terms of fidelity and audio is also really blown out and distorted and quite harsh. You know, it wasn't a kind of forensic, perfect capture. The person that made the recording, Albro T. Gall, was not a sound recordist. He was principally a photographer and entomologist, but he got interested in documenting insect sounds. And so he built a lot of custom electronics, especially custom preamps to amplify massively these intensely quiet sounds. And, you know, the result is really very kind of cruel mid-range. Like, there's no low end, there's not a lot in the highs either. It's just like this really nasty but thrilling document of a tiny life, you know, that moves so much faster than we do.
Okay, wait. We've been talking nonstop from the first
question. I'm sorry. This is what it's like to interview us. We just like blah, blah. We're like running faucets. You need to make like a chopping gesture with at your neck. Shut the hell up, guys.
I have, you know, sort of a non-interventionist approach to interviews. Oh, if people want to go, I'm going to let them go. But I am curious what what you think Moses Ash would make of this. You know, would this have ever been on his radar in any conceivable universe?
You know, judging by the output of the Folkways record company, I'm going to say that Moses would be like, great, put it out. All right, what's next?
Yeah, they're, you know, sort of on to the next
one. He seemed to have a very procedural sort of, that's great. Is the art finished? All right, put it out.
Well, it's weird because, I mean, I think there's both quantity and quality with Folkways. It's just that...
I think there are some serious quality issues with
Well, right. You mean in terms of fidelity, but not in terms of the human interest of the document.
Yeah, no, from before we started working on this, I've seen the cover of The Sounds of the American Office. I was like, I cannot wait to hear what the recordings are like. And the fact is that the recordings of The Sounds of the American Office are by any measure terrible, terrible recordings. They hum, they hiss, they have terrible signal to noise ratio. They're murky. I was so disappointed.
But it's great.
We finally heard The Sounds of the American Office. But that's the gold of conceptual artwork, is that the Sounds of the American Office live in my mind more strongly than the actual thing. You know, I mean, you can just describe it, and the gold is there.
Well, it also seems to me that part of the agenda of that is to draw attention to the things that you wouldn't notice, that are so ubiquitous that you're not paying attention to them, and then you have them separated and recorded and play back, and you go, oh, that's in my environment all day, and I never think about it.
Yeah, there's such a vitality in the poetics of how the titles of tracks like frame extremely banal actions. You know, there's literally a track that's signing checks. It's like the sound of someone signing checks. You know, like, what could be more quintessentially American than that, you know?
That reminds me of, I once was listening to a very old episode of Dragnet, the radio show, long before the TV show. And I was kind of astounded to hear that it wasn't even like going on interviews and talking to perps, etc. It was just the sounds of filing and the sounds of office work. And, oh, Janet, can you get me a form, blah, blah, blah. And it was almost like this weird structuralist exercise because it was so different than what you would ever expect or even tolerate from a contemporary police show.
Wow. Yeah, that's why we end the first song with a woman's voice saying, good morning, electronics. You know, that there's this sort of social world of, you know, very stereotypical, like, male bosses who dictate to female secretaries and, you know, capturing that socially. You know, we hear it with different ears now. It's the same sound, but it the connotations have changed. And that's, you know, that was what was fun about getting the license to work with this material. I mean, it's funny too to be heading towards a double bill with Negative Land, because I think their sort of plunderphonic, you know, manipulations of voices of authority is a big part of what makes them so funny. And we don't tend to make art that's like that, but because in the case of the Folkways back catalog, there's all these science and education records where a kind of, you know, white guy with a plummy voice tells you how sound works. You know, there's all these kind of audio authority figures, and it's so fun to get to like push off from them. So in some ways,
we were definitely thinking about Negative Land quite a bit when we were making this record, and perhaps consciously avoiding what Negative Land would do with them.
Shame.
No, but they're already doing it. They don't need to be
Don't need to be too negative
lands.
Well, what do you think you could bring to that space that that would maybe be adjacent or be sort of a Venn diagram with Negative Land that they don't already do? I mean, I love the things you do on the recent record with Aaron Dillaway and Victoria Shen, and I'm curious where you would see that intersecting.
Yeah, I think the joy of tilting worlds against each other to make them seem ridiculous is shared by Negative Land and Matmus. I think that our interest in exploring rhythm and putting rhythm up front is really kind of different. I feel like there's often a sort of sideways, wonky funkiness to Negative Land's musical elements. And it's interesting that they've made that speech-free album because they're finally like, hey, what is Negative Land if we got rid of all the zippy sayings and ridiculous phrases and just heard the music as music. I think Matmus is maybe more psychedelic in the sense that we can get kind of lost in the details of a single set of sounds and just dig into them for a longer amount of time. So I think maybe the metabolisms are different. That's what I'd say. I don't know. Everything.
Where do we share?
We share humor. You know, I think we're not like self-serious people. You know, I think you can have concepts that drive what you do without losing sight of like the sort of basic ridiculousness of life. You know, I think that would be a false choice between humor and
yeah, concept. The ability to look at things that are possibly, you know, deadly serious and still retain a sense of humor maybe is where the Venn diagram intersects.
I think they're
not
more
sure that language yeah. work.
I mean, they're more secretly dystopian than we are.
Is yeah, I mean, they're much gloomier in the long run, but that's Wobbly's
yeah.
new influence. He is such a black cloud of
fear
yeah.
and doom. I mean, there's a lot of reasons to see doom everywhere, let's be honest, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe it becomes a narcissism of small differences if we get into like how are the sharks different from the jets.
Well, I it seems like at this moment in history, how can you avoid the doom? Whether you're going directly into it and staring into the void and screaming back, or whether you're just laughing at it, I mean, there has to be a response somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, our systems are failing, and our systems exist to perpetuate themselves and to generate profit at the expense of literal, like, you know, ecological survival. So it is a high stakes moment. I think the sort of relentless falsehoods that surround us, you know, cry out for puncture. And like, my only hope, I guess, for art is that formally it embodies that experience of puncture, or it can. I don't know. I mean, some people want to make spa ambient and like they just want to chill and they want to like
that is what out. It does. What does seem like that's what the kids want to
well,
do. It's and that's just like, can we just crawl into a coffin that's really soft?
I think that's understandable too. Like a sort of longing for an alternative to a world of productivity, you know, might mean like maybe there's a coming wave of like softness or hyper localness or I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I'm 52, so I've lived through some boom bust style cycles and hype cycles. And I think that's an amazing thing about the present is that the kids are changing the past. You know, when you talk to them about what music they like from the 70s and 80s, they bring up all this really obscure stuff that to them is quintessentially expressive of a moment that you lived through. And you're like, we never listened to that, but that's amazing. Thank you for sharing that. You know, so I do have some hopes, you know, in the midst of how bad things are, that people's curiosity can become, you know, a way to shift what's possible and to dislodge the hold of the familiar. I mean, I say that in the middle of a week when Apple Music rolled out this 100 best albums of all time list that is, you know, so cynical and so racist and so, you know, so like presentist too. I don't know. So yeah, I'm not sure. There's a lot of reasons to be angry.
Angry or disappointed or just irritated. Yeah, I've noticed, I don't have kids myself, but I have friends that have younger children, teenagers, maybe young adults, and their approach and what they respond to in music is different in a way that's often very surprising to me. Like, I'm older than you, I'm 59, and I grew up when having the loudest and the most aggressive music was at a premium. I was in that scene with Steve Albini, and and that sort of ethos resonates with me. But these kids, I don't mean that like these kids, but talking to them, they want things that aren't so aggressive, that aren't so pointed and sharp oftentimes. And it seems like there's a direct inverse correlation between what's happening in the world and where they're going for their comfort food.
Yeah. Yeah. Generational styles are going to change. And I think a sense of like softness as resistance to a world that, because it's all about grabbing attention as quickly as possible.
Well, I mean, this is the problem with my making a statement about like, this is what the kids, and the fact is that the world, in terms of music, the world is like shattered into a billion different pieces in a way that you, and I'm also 59, in a way that we could never have even conceived of. There were these like giant, in at least in my teenage consciousness, there were these giant continents of kinds of music, and there were details among them. But, there was basically like rock, disco, country, those. And, there were like five, and it didn't really matter beyond that. And now, I have to celebrate the sort of like nuance with which the computer has, the internet has shattered people's interest into all these like tiny facets of knowledge.
And people who like Japanese city pop of the 80s,
Right.
Who only like Ukrainian, black metal, or who only like the forms of music coming out of Brazil right now that I don't even know the names for, that just sound so completely strange. Very fast, odd electronic music that is, frankly, like formally baffling to me. So I like that emergence and that shattering. And I think that's what makes these attempts to rescue the monoculture through coming together around lists of ranked albums. To me, that's so pathetic, and it's longing for a moment that I think can't be sustained. That doesn't mean I'm against the album or I'm against people loving albums. I absolutely like the album, but I don't like this idea that we're all going to gather around the fire and we're going to listen to all the albums and then we're going to rank them. And then we're going to finally know, which are the five greatest. Like, it's just so, it's really missing the point.
Yeah. I have a friend who is a music director of a college radio station in the 80s. And he was outraged when it came out a couple of years ago that, I guess it was Billie Eilish, had never heard of Van Halen. And he was saying, oh, how can you not know this musical history? It's so important. And I'm saying, why should a teenager care?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why Van Halen, please?
We do have a wonderful experience of being on tour, listening to a cassette of Van Halen, and the Van stereo only had the left channel and not the right, and a lot of the songs from one of those albums are mixed so that it's just drums and David Lee Roth on one channel and it's guitar and bass in the other channel, so you get this very hilarious hard pan mix. Recommended.
It never occurred to me that Van Halen did that. That's such an old school stereo thing.
Yeah, that's like a James Brown thing, or like the beginning of stereo, certain like Beatles songs,
or Esquivel even.
Yeah, I think Scott Walker too is hard pan, like a 30th Century Man. It's all acoustic guitar on the right and it's all his voice on the left. So mashup creators, take note.
Well, did you ever think that you would go into more of the found music thing? I mean, would you go into Tony Schwartz's catalog if you had the opportunity?
Who's Tony Schwartz?
Oh, he's a guy who did a lot of recordings for Folkways. And he kind of pioneered that sounds of the junkyard, and he might have been the one who recorded the sounds of The Office, in fact.
Wow, really?
Oh,
I don't think I never came across that name. But then again, I should say, in terms of this record that we made, we received not records with liner notes, but digital files.
With PDFs of liner notes.
In some cases.
And we had hundreds of them. It was hundreds of hours of music. So we were going on, strangely, a mix of like, well, you have to listen to everything and hear it as sound, but you're also thinking, what's the conceptual handle of the name? You know, if something is like the sounds of medicine, then you're like, oh, I'm listening for the medical. But yeah, I'm embarrassed that we didn't recognize Tony Schwartz's name. If
yeah,
Tony
me
Schwartz
neither.
Is in fact the auteur behind the things that were sampled. I mean, we.
But wait, you were saying, I thought your question was, would you ever want to be more musical?
Oh, well, if I said that, I that's not exactly what I meant to say. I was just curious if that's a direction you would want to go into more in the future in terms of, you said you hadn't necessarily sampled things in a plunderphonic sort of way.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, we had done it with the previous album, which was a response to the electroacoustic music of Polish composer Bogusław Schaefer. So we had made a whole album of manipulating the sort of choral and piano and electronic sounds of Bogusław Schaefer and making kind of new music out of old music. So I think our pendulum kind of swings back and forth, you know. We're working on new music now, and we're going to share some of that at the concert that nobody has to go to, but they can if they're into that. So you may hear some new sounds from what might be the next Matmus album, but I'm honestly still not convinced. You know, I think we have to really believe in something.
There's a poster on the wall behind me that says The Metal Album.
I was just going to ask about that.
I don't know if it's going to work or not. I feel like
we take turns being in charge of the albums, quote, to keep from fighting about it.
Well, that doesn't work, obviously.
I think Drew is in charge of the next one, which I thought was the Metal Album.
I thought it was too, but I'm having a crisis of confidence. You know, I think I'm having that Lana Del Rey Summertime Sadness, y'all. It's summertime, and I just don't. Everything's going soft like a banana that you should have eaten like 2 days ago, and now you're looking at it and you're like, I just don't know. So I don't know if it's me or the songs or me meeting the songs, but. You know, I have been enjoying playing some of this new material that's made all out of metal objects and metal sounds, you know, figuring out what we want to work with. I mean, in some ways, that's been a hallmark of our practice since the at least the second album, making entire songs out of a single sound source. And that becomes kind of a playful encounter with the materiality of a given kind of substance. So making the whole album Plastic Anniversary out of plastic objects, you know, you're exploring the range of like, what can plastic sound like? What can we do with plastic? And then also, what do our manipulation techniques let us do to supplement the ways that a given material does and doesn't want to sound? And it's the same with metal. Like, I think the risk with working with a lot of metal is you got a lot of bright, hard, sharp attack. But you can have a lot of ear fatigue after about 30 minutes if it's all metallic, you know, chimes. I mean, if you think of the beauty of gamelan, part of that is that you've got these deep, low, resonant gongs that are so long, you know, and that's a contrast to the sharp, you know, tinkling of like the smaller materials.
Oh, I think the noise cancellation removed
right,
that sound.
Right, it's just silent, doesn't it?
Yeah,
does it become nothing? That's amazing.
Yeah, I can't hear anything.
Nothing.
Not anything.
Wow. I'm
bang a gong, get it off.
For those of you at home who can't see the video screen, I'm slamming a thing into a giant metal gong.
It looks like it makes a great sound. I wish I knew what it sounded like.
Well, that's the beauty of conceptual art, is that the sound in your mind as you imagine a sound is more beautiful than any sound in the world. Can you hear that?
I heard about half of that.
Okay.
So if a tree falls in the forest and you are there to hear it, but it doesn't make a sound, is it still a sound or what's the...
The sound in the mind.
For those listening at home... More instruments are being played that are not being heard, just so you know. Well, gentlemen, I could keep doing this all day, but we have just a limited amount of time, so unfortunately I have to wrap it up. But thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you. Thanks for your interest.
It's been our pleasure.
And those listeners out there, do or don't come and see us. It's your choice.
...2022 song from the Baltimore-based duo Matmos from their Thrill Jockey album. That's the song Flash Cube Fogwares Glucha Aferishlo.
La despensa de alimentos de Catskill está localizada en la parroquia de la Iglesia de St. Luke en Catskill, en la calle William, número 50. La despensa está abierta todos los viernes de la 1 hasta las 4 de la tarde. La comida sana es un derecho. Para más información... Bienvenidos a todos a venir. Llamar por teléfono a 551-299-2456. Mirar la página web catskillfoodpantry.org o conectar con nosotros en Facebook en Catskill Food Pantry.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
This is Bria Barthel for Hudson Mohawk Magazine, and I'm back in the still-under-renovation Lansingburg branch of the Troy Public Library with Laurie Dreyer, the branch manager, who is probably delighted to be slowly getting back in full swing. So, Laurie, why don't we start with an update on where things stand for the branch, and then we'll get into your book picks.
Absolutely. Thank you for asking, Bria.
Right now, we have half of the main floor closed, so that really does limit what we can do. We do have a few programs scheduled in the coming month or so. So you can explore adult yoga with Dana Cadman, which has always been a very popular program for us. And our Friends of the Library group is going to have a very big book sale out on the lawn on June 8th. That is a Saturday, so June 8th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. with a bag sale from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. They're very excited. That's also going to mark the reopening of the bookseller for them.
And the bookseller is an entire room filled with books for sale in the downstairs, the first level of the library. So this month is a little different. We will not be hearing about books that are in the library. We will be hearing about books that are soon to come hot off the press. So Lori, take it away.
Thank you. I wanted to focus on books that I am excited about reading that are coming out this summer. So everything is coming out by August. And you can go into our catalog at www.thetroylibrary.org. And you can put a request in for any of these titles, and you'll get it just as soon as it arrives.
So even though you don't physically have the books, they still do show up in the catalog?
They do. We have a record for each one of these in the catalog, and you can put your name on the list to get it as soon as it comes in and gets processed.
Do you need to have a Troy card to do that, or will any of the cards in the system work?
Any card in Upper Hudson, in the Upper Hudson Library System, which is all the libraries in Albany and Rensselaer County, any card in that system will work.
Great. So, listeners, you don't have to get out pen and paper. I'll have a full list of these titles and authors on the description for this segment.
All right, let's go. So a few updates on popular authors just to start off. I don't know how many of you read the Divergent series by Veronica Roth, but she has a new fairy tale feast coming out. It is based on the Slavic legend of Baba Yaga, and it is called When Among Crows. So that one comes out on May 14th. So it's already out. We probably have copies in the library. But we don't have one in this library right now because it's already checked out. So the next one is for those of you who were really into the All Souls series, which is The Discovery of Witches was the first book in that series. And they did make a television show based on that. There is now a fifth book in that series called The Blackbird Oracle. And it continues to follow Diana Bishop through her family's past and her fears about having children. This is the first book in the series since 2018.
And when you say her family's past, what is it about her family?
It is about the immense magic that is contained in her past. So her family is a family of witches, and she marries a vampire. So there's lots and lots of magic happening.
And listeners, I'm so sorry you can't see Lori's face as she talks about this because her eyebrows were all a twitch.
I really got into the first three books, I have to say. I have not kept up, but I am looking forward, so I'll probably read the fourth one and then read this one when it comes out on July 16th. All right, next is a book by Lev Grossman. You may recognize his name because he wrote the Magician series of books, which came out ages ago, but they again made a television show about it. And this one is called The Bright Sword. And the cool thing about this one is that it is an Arthurian style legend. So it is all about King Arthur, and there's a new very talented knight comes into town, finds that King Arthur actually has died. And so it is up to him to get the round table back together.
And the title is The Bright Sword, and I'm envisioning a neon Excalibur.
Yes, yes, exactly. That's perfect. And that one also comes out on July 16th. Okay, so moving on to new books or authors that you may not know as well. I wanted to introduce you to The Lost Boy of Santa Chionia by Juliet Grahams. That is G-R-A-M-E-S. And that comes out on July 23rd. It is a mystery. So it is about a woman who moves to Santa Cionia, which is in Italy, in Calabria, Italy. It takes place in 1960. She moves there to start a preschool. And while she's there, there's a giant flood, and there are some human remains that pop up during the flood. So then she has to figure out what happened and why, where did these human remains come from?
Okay, that sounds cheery.
Well, I didn't say we were going for cheery, Bria. All right, how about this one then? Kevin Kwan, the writer of Crazy Rich Asians, he has a new book coming out called Lies and Weddings, and you are going to love this. All right, it comes out on May 21st, so it's already out. A former Hong Kong supermodel is pressuring her son, who is the future Earl of Greshamsbury, to pursue a wealthy woman while he's at his sister's wedding. And when a volcano erupts during the
night. As they do at all weddings.
Exactly, like you do. It reveals a bunch of schemes from the family and the fact that they are broke to the world.
I'm sorry, the volcano reveals this.
Somehow, yes. Hilarity ensues. I don't want to tell you too much more, but it is very fun and silly read that not only examines the world of the uber rich in Asia, but also the, you know, kind of classic British rich telling, sort of like Bridgerton. So it's your Crazy Rich Asians meets Bridgerton. So one that I'm really excited about all of these, actually, but this one sounds so fun to me. It is called Oye, O-Y-E, by Melissa Mogollon. It comes out May 14th, and it is an entire book about this youngest member of a Colombian family in Miami, and she's very close to her family, but her mother's sort of, you know, got some mental health problems, her sister's absent, and the person that she depends on the most is Abue, her grandmother. And so during a hurricane, her grandmother moves into their house and has to share a room with her and starts revealing a bunch of family secrets. And the fun part about this book, it is that it is written entirely as a one-sided phone conversation between the between the protagonist and her sister. So I am very much looking forward to that. It is described as a telenovela coming-of-age family saga comedy.
Okie dokie. You're certainly giving us variety. Next.
Well, like I said, these are all, I'm trying to give everybody stuff to read while they're sitting on the beach or hanging out by the lake. You know, you're relaxing, soaking in the sun. Why not read about Margot's Got Money Troubles? So if you thought that Kevin Kwan book was silly, here we go. All right, so Margot is a single mom. She becomes a single mom at 19, and she turns to OnlyFans to make ends meet. Now, I'm not sure if you're familiar with OnlyFans, but it is a site that is devoted to, how do I say this? To fetishes, almost. And people pay for pictures of certain body parts or certain acts. Yes. So, this is how she's making a living now.
Okay, and unfortunately, we're running low on time. The authors and titles will be in the segment description on our website at mediasanctuary.org. All of these books are in the catalog at thetroylibrary.org. And you can stop by and talk with Lori about what other great books she has to suggest. She's at the Lansingburg branch of the Troy Public Library, which is located at
27 114th Street at the corner of 4th Avenue and 114th.
Thanks a lot, Lori. Always fun to talk with you.
Oh, thank you, Brea. It's good to talk to you, too.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Here's Matmos from their 2020 album, The Consuming Flame. This is Reciprocal Realms. Baltimore. This is the band Matmos and their song ESP.